Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Thanks so much for being here with us. Hey, tomorrow is a very important day in a little place we like to call the universe. The Queen of Heaven, we commemorate the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary tomorrow. And so we'll have special programming for that. But today, the day before this important Marian feast, we celebrate one of the great saints. I'm loath to say that. I guess it's almost a repetition to say it this way. One of the great saints and one of the great people, but really one of the most wonderful people of the 20th century. His feast day comes the day before the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and it's very appropriate because this great saint was devoted to the Blessed Virgin Mary. As a matter of fact, I would go so far as to say, there are many, many people who call us and say, the problem I have with the Catholic Church is the veneration of Mary. And if you want to see what the veneration of Mary actually produces, there is no one in the 20th century, I would say, who loved Mary more than Maximilian Kolbe. And you want to see what that really produces, not what, you know, does that produce some kind of idolatry, or does that hurt our relationship with Jesus? If you want to see a real example of what devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary produces, look at the life of Maximilian Kolbe, who loved her more than just about anybody in the 20th century. So in order to celebrate the feast of St. Maximilian Kolbe, and I hope you're writing it as Kolbe, K-O-L-B-E, and if you're not familiar with him, look him up. And if you're like, well, what will happen to me if I become a Catholic and I have this veneration of the Blessed Virgin Mary? Look at the life of Maximilian Kolbe, at this unbelievable force of the unleashing of the power of the Holy Spirit in the 20th century. And then you get a sense of what that power is like, what happens. And in order to celebrate the feast of St. Maximilian Kolbe today, we're going to talk with Anthony D'Ambrosio. You know, we talked to his father, Marcellino D'Ambrosio, but Marcellino thought, D'Ambrosio is hard enough. I'm going to give the kid the name Anthony, because I personally am very proud that I can say Marcellino D'Ambrosio, but most people can't. And Anthony D'Ambrosio is the writer and the director of a brand new film coming out next month, just about a month from today, called Triumph of the Heart, and it's about Maximilian Kolbe. Anthony D'Ambrosio, thank you for being with us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Cy.
Am I correct to say that love and devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary is what we can attribute a person like Maximilian Kolbe to?
Absolutely. I think that Maximilian Kolbe is the example of the, I think, perfect confluence of both an incredible, like, masculine spirit of self-sacrifice with the tenderness of Our Lady. And you can see his missionary heart in the way that he showed up to Auschwitz and was able to bring light to darkness, to enter into the suffering of others. And I think that you can see the image of Christ in him, perhaps the most polished and clear image of Christ's face to the 20th century church, because of his devotion and his connection to Mary. I think that she revealed to him and formed in him that image, that icon that he bore to Auschwitz.
I have to say, you say the word Auschwitz and you think that is the symbol of the absolute greatest depravity of the 20th century, the most depraved century in the history of humanity, where humanity sunk to its lowest point in the 20th century, at the same time also reaching its highest point in the 20th century. It's a century of complete contrast. One of the things that Maximilian Kolbe, you note about is his devotion to Jesus, his love of the church, his love of the faith, and his love of his fellow human beings. You said he went into the worst places. Well, yeah, Auschwitz is the worst place of the 20th century. He was also a minister, weirdly. I find this very odd about his life, in the city of Nagasaki before the war. So it's almost as if his life is a marking out of the places that God most wanted to be in the 20th century.
I think that there's something really interesting about that as almost a reference to even Christ. I think that the descent of Christ and the incarnation into Jerusalem, into Israel, it was very much a act of like entering into perhaps like one of the hardest, worst places with the most difficulty. And I think that, you know, we see in Christ's descent, even down into the cross and into hell, really, that is the journey of the Christian who follows Christ. When we call ourselves Christians, that is what we're saying we are willing to do, to pick up our crosses and to walk into hell and to bring light there. And we've been given the mandate to do that and given the light to do that. But it requires an amazing courage. And I think also an amazing, I guess, comfort that we have the saints who are with us. We have Mary, who is our mother and giving us comfort as we enter into these places. And Colby was, I think, enabled to see where is the church going to have the hardest time rooting, and to have this immediate desire to go there. He had, it was like he was a homing beacon for the most difficult place to evangelize. And of course, God ultimately gave him the honor of dying in a starvation bunker in Auschwitz, not just in Auschwitz, the worst place on earth at the time, but inside of the worst place on earth at that time. And even there, we were able to see through his life and through his hope and his songs and his voice, the way that he died with courage and love for his fellow inmates, that love and hope can conquer even those darkest places.
We're talking about Saint Maximilian Kolbe, raised to the altars, as they say, or canonized by Pope John Paul II. Our guest is Anthony D'Ambrosio. He's the writer and director of a new movie coming out, a wonderful movie that I wish every Catholic on earth, every person on earth would go see, to see what a truly human life looks like, Triumph of the Heart. So before we get into talking about the movie, there are people who don't know Maximilian. They're like, they're talking about this guy like he's the most important person of the whole 20th century. Who is Maximilian Kolbe? So will you give us the biography, the brief biography of Maximilian Kolbe?
Yeah, I guess the story beats he's a son of a textile worker in a poor place in the middle of Poland, which was itself one of the poorest places in Europe. It was it's one place that is constantly under attack. And the faith there has been shaped by its constant dealing with oppression and with being conquered by Russia and Germany and Conan from the South. So it's a place where the faith has really, really taken root, and it has been so completely enmeshed with the national identity of Poland that as a young boy, Maximilian Kolbe really wanted to sort of express his militaristic kind of desire to defend his country and his patriotism also through his faith. And those two things were sort of very deeply tied in him. He had a very famous vision from Mary of being offered two crowns. One was a red crown that symbolized martyrdom. One was a white crown that symbolized purity. He ultimately became a priest, and in doing so, sort of taking that white crown of purity. And then ultimately was offered that red crown again at the end of his life as he became a martyr in Auschwitz. But before that, during his priesthood, he was perhaps one of the most entrepreneurial saints that the church has ever seen. He saw the coming of the 20th century culture of death through mass media, through propaganda, through radio, through the newspapers, and he became the first Catholic saint to, and perhaps the first Catholic ever, to really build a media conglomerate. Before EWTN, before Word on Fire, Saint Maximilian Kolbe was the one who really showed that evangelization through mass media is kind of the next wave of the 20th century. And he waded into that fight, rolled up his sleeves, raised money as a Franciscan friar to get into the very, very expensive and difficult, logistically difficult challenge of distributing a magazine all across Poland, a newspaper all across Poland, getting a radio started when all of these things, of course, were incredibly expensive and difficult and work intensive, logistically intensive. He even helped to invent new pieces of the printing process at the time in order to make his syndication of, I think, a million people possible every day. And so this was a man who had incredible influence, who is courted, of course, by generals and the president of Poland for his political capital. And he ultimately decided that he wanted to go and found a friary in Nagasaki and go through the challenge of translating Polish, which is one of the hardest languages in the entire world, to Japanese, which is perhaps the other hardest language in the entire world, and to do so in under a year and have a whole operation up and running there. He came back and was rounded up when they were invaded, and he became one of the first martyrs of the church in Poland, in Auschwitz at the time.
Okay, it's so incredible. I'm so happy you used the word entrepreneur, because we think of these heroic entrepreneurs, you know, that we have today. They make these great companies and all that. But that same energy can be harnessed for other purposes. And sometimes people with those talents become a priest. And he really is. I don't know. Do you know if he's an official patron of Catholic media? Because he really should be a patron of Catholic. Is he?
He's one of these saints that has a sort of a pretty far reach in terms of what he is the patron of. He's the patron saint of addicts. He's the patron saint of the pro-life movement. He's the patron saint of media. So he's got quite a bit that he has been given heavenly resource for.
Well, now you did a brief biography of Kolbe, and we're going to take a break. But before we take the break, I would like you to delve into his death just a bit more, because this is the lens through which this is what you put in front of your lens for the camera for this movie, Triumph of the Heart, which I hope every human being will see September 12th. It comes out, Triumph of the Heart. But there's more. Give us a little more about his martyrdom. He's not just a guy that got rounded up and killed. There's more to his story.
Of course. Yeah. So perhaps the most famous part of his story is that he wasn't just rounded up and killed, of course. He was in Auschwitz, and the point of Auschwitz at the time was to exterminate the Polish spirit, to destroy Polish culture, identity, to dehumanize its leaders. And in the face of that dehumanization effort, Kolbe stepped forward and volunteered volunteered to join 9 other men in a starvation bunker and to save one man's life who was being picked at random to be thrown into the cell. And this was a torture that was being used, both as psychological torture and a literal torture, in order to deter people from going missing or from escaping. If somebody escaped at the time, they would be all of the people in their bunkhouse would be rounded up. They would 10 would be picked at random to die in this really terrible, terrifying way. And so Kolbe volunteered to enter into this death and to accompany these 9 other men through their death voluntarily. And I think that one of the details of it that is so, so amazing that perhaps many of us have heard, a lot of people know that he was singing songs and praying the rosary and ultimately was not... He wasn't even starved to death. He survived for 14 days without food or water and ultimately had to be injected to be killed because he was causing so much trouble. What was that? He was using his voice all the way up until the moment of his death to proclaim God's goodness. And even in the darkest place on earth, his voice could be heard singing. And ultimately, those who were walking by, who were even working inside of this prison chamber, or this prison block, they said that this place normally sounded like hell. It was the sounds of hell, the sounds of the deepest human anguish possible. And while Kolbe was there, it became transformed into a cathedral. And I think that there's a miraculous story of hope and of conversion in that. And that was what I wanted to focus on in the movie.
Our guest is Anthony D'Ambrosio, who wrote and directed the movie Triumph of the Heart. And so we'll talk about the movie. It's wonderful to be able to celebrate Maximilian Kolbe on this, his feast day, right before one of the great Marian feasts. And we'll talk a little bit, we'll talk more about his devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary and her help to him in his service to the Lord Jesus Christ while he was here on the earth. But when we come back, I want to talk about this movie because it's fun to have a movie to talk about in order to celebrate the life of Maximilian Kolbe right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The most original Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
On Mother Angelica Answering the Call, Father Joseph and Doug Keck mine decades of phone calls answered by Mother Angelica. Mother dishes out teaching, advice, laughter, and plenty of prayers as she takes calls from her family.
Mother Angelica Answering the Call, Sunday afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And my job's fun today. I get to talk with Anthony D'Ambrosio, filmmaker and entrepreneur himself, who's got the new movie coming out. September 12th, it will open, Triumph of the Heart. Please do look for it. Anthony, I'm going to ask you to tell me about the movie, but while we've got folks listening, why is it important? Like you were telling me before, you were beginning to tell me before we started this hour, that it's important that people come out when a movie opens, and that Catholics need to get savvy about this if they want more good Catholic films. Wait, hang on. Wait, I got no. Oh, sorry. We didn't have audio of you. Go ahead. Start again.
Okay.
Tell me about films opening, Anthony D'Ambrosio.
Well, yeah, I think one of the things that's so fun about the Catholic community is that all of us have a pretty high appreciation of art. You know, we're all humanities majors. We've been steeped in kind of the Catholic tradition. So we have a high bar. And I think we've been very disappointed by a lot of movies that have come out. And we're not the type of people that like to go to be the first people to do things. We like to be to hear about something from a oral tradition of 20 other people before we're like, okay, I'm going to take that seriously. It's part of our DNA. And unfortunately, the theatrical sort of movie industry does not sort of accommodate for that slow process. When a movie is being released, basically the distributor system out there looks at two days for the entire life cycle of the movie to determine exactly where it's going to go, what kind of deals it gets, how big it gets to be, totally based on the first 2 days of its opening and the theatrical release.
Wow.
And so if you wait for perhaps the second weekend to go and see an indie movie about a saint, it determines whether or not that movie, that's fine, that's great, you know, that it will help it a little bit, but the sort of decisions about its distribution life cycle have already been made. And so we have to become savvy about this, because if we want to see more Catholic movies being made, being produced, being distributed, having a wider reach, we have to sort of approach this as going to vote, you know, on the presidential election. Like, this is a deadline that when we go and buy a ticket and we go and see the movie and we bring friends, we're doing it as if it's a vote to say we want to see more of this happening. And the deadline for getting that vote in is Saturday night on opening weekend. So for us, wow, that will be Saturday night, the feast of the Holy Name of Mary. And we think it's an appropriate day to release a movie about St. Maximilian Kolbe, kind of in honor of her. And so that's the day that we're encouraging everybody to go and see this.
So put it on your calendar that you're going to the movies to see Triumph of the Heart. September, so that would be September 12th and 13th would be the 2 days.
That's right.
Get there those 2 days, and then that's one of the things that will help more great Catholic movies be made. You know, people, you can make I think it was Flannery O'Connor who said the key to a great Catholic novel is it has to be a novel. Like it can't just be great Catholic sentiment. It has to be a work of art. And a moment where I thought, oh, Anthony D'Ambrosio knows what he's doing, is the depiction of St. Maximilian Kolbe in The Line, where I think if you were making a pious film, it would almost be that Kolbe would know exactly what to do, and there would be a kind of like, maybe there's drama all around him, but he would be like this, glowing figure that just stepped forward and said, I'll go, you know, like that. And that's not what, like, he's a saint, and he does step forward, but he, looking at the film, you're like, he's not sure what to do. Like, it's a moment where a lot of stuff's happening. It's happening kind of quickly. There's a lot of roughness and violence to the whole thing. And tell me about that. Tell me about depicting a saint, but not as a holy card.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the greatest things that I've desired ever since I was a boy. And I read the stories of the saints and was inspired by them and kept encountering people telling their stories, whether it was in media or in books or whatever, in ways that I felt like were not actually good stories. You know, they weren't dramatic, they weren't entertaining. But also, ultimately, the reason why they were not dramatic or entertaining was because the character of the saint was always depicted as having all the answers the entire time from the moment they were born. They were levitating, you know? And yeah, you can't really relate with that. There's no drama to that. And that's not how God works in our lives. And so I think, for me, I came from the perspective of having lost my faith. That was where I was when I started to meditate on this story. It was not from a perspective of Catholicism and of just sort of like believing everything and taking it all in. I was incredibly skeptical of St. Maximilian Kolbe at the time that I began to really, you know, be haunted by him. And I think my perspective on the story and the lens through which I was telling it was really this lens from the perspective of somebody who does not believe. Like, if I'm going to go down all the way into the grit of this story and tell it in a way that's going to appeal to people who do not have faith, I have to show it as if this character of Maximilian Kolbe is a human being who is like us and who doesn't always know what to do, who doesn't always have the answer, who often stumbles and says the wrong thing, and ultimately himself has to grow through the process. God is doing something in him as well as through the other people around him, even in this moment. And so that's definitely how we depicted it. And the movie gets very gritty. It's very like Passion of the Christy in its intensity because we wanted to get real.
Yeah, but but there is the figure of Kolbe who we like, and so it's not like, it's not entirely bleak. I guess that actually makes sense to me now that I'm saying it. That is Kolbe's role in Auschwitz in a certain way, to allow us almost to look at what we can't look at, what we can't bear to look at, because he's there, and so we can. It's almost like he makes that possible.
I mean, that is what Christ did too on the cross. The idea that even from this kind of Old Testament story of the snake being raised up when all of the snakes were biting the Israelites in the Exodus, and Moses raises one up on a stake, and looking upon that snake is what heals everybody. There's something of the truth in God giving us the image of Christ on the cross that therefore allows us to bear our own suffering with grace and with redemption. It's the window into God's amazing act of redemptive love to us. And that is the same for Kolbe, that he somehow, by his descent into the most dark and difficult places and ultimately like corners of the human experience, it allows us to go there ourselves, and even encourages us to go there ourselves in our own imagination and our meditations, and then ultimately in our own sufferings, to be able to connect our sufferings to that story, and to say, if he could do that, we could also bear these crosses ourselves as well.
Is it hard to make a movie with Nazis in it because they're a movie trope? Do you know what I mean? Like there's a everybody's made a movie with Nazis in it, and so here you like is it hard to depict them in a way that's not just a cartoon?
Yeah, I mean, you saw a little bit of it, right?
So
what were your thoughts on how we depicted them? I would love to hear your immediate response, and then I can answer.
The whole thing seemed like a human mess to me more than, like, it didn't seem to me that we were setting up the poor prisoners who have no agency, the utterly mean, gross Nazis, and then the holy shining saint who walks through the midst of that. It seemed much more of a jumble to me.
Right, and I think that part of the I think intensity of the story comes from being confronted with somebody who's like a normal person who is also perpetrating this kind of evil. I remember as a young man, my parents sharing The Scarlet and the Black with me. I don't know if you ever saw that movie with Gregory Peck, but there's a Nazi commandant who is just sort of a father, and a lot of it sort of centers around his life.
Okay, well, you probably hear that music. I messed up. I didn't give you enough time to answer. We're talking about the movie Anthony D'Ambrosio has got coming out next month, Triumph of the Heart. It's about one of the most important people in history, Maximilian Kolbe. If you don't know him, we'll talk a little bit more about him when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world. But it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Throughout history, some Catholics have been among the worst kind of villains, right? Or were they? In Canceled, historian Steve Weidenkopf digs into the lives and controversies of some of these Catholics whose reputations have been blackened, often unfairly. He takes on the anti-Catholic versions of history and defends not only these figures, but the faith they represent. Order your copy of Canceled today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore. Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Anthony D'Ambrosio, the maker of the new movie Triumph of the Heart, which I'm hoping every human being on earth will see. But there's nothing wrong with holy cards. I've got plenty of holy cards. I don't mean to insult holy cards. It's just that when you go to a movie and it's a holy card, it's not a good movie. A movie's got to be a movie. And so what we were talking about with the writer and director, Anthony D'Ambrosio, is about how you make a movie about someone who is, in fact, depicted on thousands and thousands and thousands of holy cards, St. Maximilian Kolbe. And we're talking about the depiction of the Nazis. And it's weird that the Nazi is the villain of so many movies. And you were talking about a movie I had not seen and I haven't seen with Gregory Peck, where he's both a Nazi and a dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Gregory Peck is playing the role of a cardinal who is going in and sort of saving Jews and POWs and smuggling them through the Vatican. It's this very fun story. And his foil is this Nazi officer who's just kind of living large in Rome. And I was very, very influenced by that movie, both because it made me realize just how normal, like, the Nazi evil was, that in some way this was a culture of people who was doing all of the things that we do normally as well, like right. getting married, having children, doing Christmas, getting them gifts, wanting to please their wives, having marital strife. And all of that is kind of going on while they're also taking people, shipping them in trains to starvation, you know, places and just sort of putting them in furnaces. And you're like, how could you get there? So we wanted to create a sense of that in the character of Fritsch, who ultimately condemns Kolbe to death. We wanted to show the two of them. Every good movie, you have a villain and a hero who are sort of opposite sides of the same coin, that are similar in that they could have ultimately chosen to be what the other person is. And that is really like how we tried to sort of tell the story. Fritsch is this loving father who takes care of his kids and loves them deeply, but ultimately is caught up in a game of power and believes everything is about willpower and strength, and has this kind of ubermensch identity. And that leads him to ultimately being alone and sort of losing the battle with Kolbe at the end.
That, which is also a complex thing, this idea that Kolbe's battle is being fought on a different plane. How do you depict on film a battle that's happening on the spiritual plane?
Well, I think that there is the spiritual plane always is mapped over onto the world of human decisions and human virtue. And like, it is, regardless of where we are, we always have the decision to either bring a little bit of hell or a little bit of heaven into the world that we are sort of navigating. And I think that that the way that we depict this sort of meeting of these two spiritual fault lines between the Nazi identity and kind of the Kolbean devotion was by going through the eyes of the other prisoners. The sort of political realm where these prisoners are, and their beliefs, their actions are being influenced in some way by the Nazis, who want them to despair and to kill themselves, or Kolbe, who wants them to discover their humanity and to lift their voices to God. It's sort of a war between those two perspectives that Kolbe is fighting for. And the ending is really kind of the measure of which one wins over those people and their morale, if you will.
I suppose that's why the word triumph is right there in the title, Triumph of the Heart. It's not a triumph of the steel or the lead or the it's a triumph of the heart. Pope John Paul II had a great devotion to Maximilian Kolbe, both poles. Another great saint of the 20th century, Faustina Kowalska from Poland. God just seems to have decided that in the 20th century, we needed an outpouring of Polish saints. Like, and there are many others. I'm just naming the three that I think are most known here in the U.S. But so you talked a little bit about Poland. What is it about Poland that produces these saints in the 20th century?
Suffering. I mean, it's just plain and obvious. There's really just one answer to that question, and it is that Poland has suffered greatly through its entire history. It, as a country, has never been a powerful country. That's not totally true. It has had sort of a zenith, but for most of its life cycle in Christendom, it's been conquered and conquered and conquered and conquered. And the Polish people have somehow learned how to maintain their identity and their Catholicism, kind of both of those things together, through being oppressed, through being subjugated. And I think that the 20th century was this great century of despair a great century of the culture of death sort of looming large and becoming almost like suffocatingly powerful. And I think that God was like, I've been preparing this little jewel of a country to lead the way through this, I guess, through this century's slavery and through the century's, I guess, despair.
And so that happened to you, this Polish Saint Kolbe, because you began to tell us about you. You didn't begin to be interested in Kolbe because you are so profound in your faith. You were like, this is my soulmate in the faith. You came to Kolbe. You said he haunted you. So tell me about your own relationship with Maximilian Kolbe.
Yeah, that's right. I actually began to be dedicated to Kolbe and to meditate on his life when I was not Catholic. I lost my faith, actually. I grew up with, obviously, many people who listen to this. I grew up with a father who is a theologian and had perhaps one of the richest theological and intellectual childhoods that anybody could wish for as a Catholic. But when I left seminary and got into evangelization, I encountered a very profound suffering. I have a chronic illness, a chronic mold infection that was not one of these things that nobody could figure out. It took over a decade to actually get it diagnosed, but it caused a chronic insomnia, life-threatening insomnia that would only allow me to sleep for maybe 20 minutes to 2 hours a night, and had many this sort of constellation of all these weird symptoms and effects. But ultimately, it led me to having to grieve the marriage that I thought that I was going to have with the woman that I loved. I had to grieve the loss of a career going into Catholic speaking. And in the course of those 2 years of grief, I lost my faith, became one of these very antagonistic, very angry atheists that perhaps all of us have met. And I was hoping, you know, to tear down the faith of anyone around me. And this caused a lot of tension, as you could imagine, in my family. And in the midst of that time, I was writing and doing a lot of freelance writing. And I found a client that was dedicated to Maximilian Kolbe, and they asked me to write an article about him. And during my research, I found all of these little details in his story that shocked me and that totally revolutionized the sort of impression of this sort of gruff, slightly stern and angry Polish priest that I had seen all these photographs of, and revealed this unbelievable like story of tenderness and of hope in the midst of darkness. And I realized that especially the fact that he was executed with four other people, that he was not alone in being executed. Ultimately, that if he survived for 14 days without food or water, he was able to convey that determination to the other people in his cell. How did he do that? I had sort of this understanding of what it might be like to starve to death because I was starving for sleep. And I knew that if he was able to do that for those people, that he had something to share with me that I couldn't deny was more profound than anything else that I could think about or that I had found at the time. And I was trying to ask the question, if I don't get better and my suffering like this extends for the rest of my life, like how could I possibly find a reason to live that life? And I felt like Kolbe was the person who had the answer for that. And somehow in the loneliness of my nights, I began to be haunted by sort of this saint and these conversations that I was having with him.
Wow. So now you don't just go from that to taking your camera out and making a movie. There's a mid section on that. And I think there's a lot of people who would like to know, how do you get a movie like this made? Like, how do you go from idea or even script? And you have experience as a filmmaker making shorter kinds of, pieces of film. But how do you get a feature film made? How does that happen?
Well, I mean, I think that the answer to that question is changing even as we're speaking, and our movie is actually one of those big spearheads of change. I'm somebody who's done a lot of grassroots marketing in the Catholic space, and previously to this, it was almost unimaginable that somebody could make a movie about a saint that is a period piece, just that's making it as an entrepreneur out of the Catholic kind of ecosystem, right? Like, if you think about how much Cabrini cost, that cost $40 million to make. Why? Because you have to recreate New York City in the 1800s. That is a very, very expensive budget. It is very difficult to recreate, you know, Japan in the 1930s or Auschwitz in the 1940s. But there are a lot of things that are changing about technology and about the way that you can crowdfund. And so our movie is perhaps the first thing that is where we're seeing a movie that is coming out of the Catholic ecosystem that has been completely crowdfunded outside of the studio system, has no like big millionaires or billionaires who've dedicated their fortunes, you know, on their deathbed to making a movie about a saint. This is like, you know, mom and pop Catholic made. And I think that what led us to being able to do that was, one, my own journey. I think people saw a lot of authenticity in it and wanted to help. I posted a short film that we had made that was sort of a similar proof of concept, and we crowdfunded it and raised about $300,000 to go out in Poland, and then just kept on, you know, going hat in hand to Catholics asking, can you give us miles? Can you help us to, you know, cook dinner for our set? You know, these sorts of things that allowed us to really build something really amazing without a whole lot of money.
Wow. So how long did it take you to make the film then? So you go over to Poland. Do you speak Polish?
I do not speak
Polish. So you're
Polish,
like Colby in Japan. You just said, I'm going there. I don't speak this. Okay. All right. So you're like, okay, I crowdfunded. Now I'm just going to Poland. But you don't speak Polish. How do you make a movie in Poland if you don't speak Polish?
Yeah, I mean, the closest sort of reference point that people have to making a movie would be like planning a wedding. So basically, just imagine going to a different country and being like, I have to plan a wedding, but not one wedding. If you're shooting for 30 days or 20 days, it's like 30 weddings in a row. Every day is a new wedding, right? That's the amount of logistical complexity that's involved in it. You have to have hundreds of people who are involved in making a movie, all the way from the person who is like helping make sure that the car parking lot is safe, you know, yeah. All the way to the person who is taking care of the snake or the rat, or like cleaning up the prison cell or putting on blankets onto actors in between takes. So there's so much that goes into it. And I think that it was really just the Catholic kind of community that allowed us to do it. I posted on Facebook. I was like, does anyone know anyone in the film industry in Poland? Does anyone know somebody in Poland that can take me around and show me Auschwitz and explain things to me? And of course, you know, every person who is Catholic in the U.S. has a Polish friend who knows somebody in Poland. It's just like we are such a small world. Yeah. And that connectivity is actually what allowed us to sort of crowdsource all of the different things that we would need in order to make it happen in a very short period of time. But it took us about a few months to shoot. Then it took us a year and a half to edit. And now it's taking another, you know, half year to get the distribution put together for this theatrical release. And so we're finally there. We finished the movie. We're releasing it on September 12th and sort of putting that clarion call out there for Catholics to come and show up and sort of take that stance that they want to see more of this happen.
Triumph of the Heart is the name of the movie. September 12th and 13th are the 2 days for you to go see it. We'll talk about it again when we come back, but there's a big reason why you want to go, the way the movie industry works, in the first 2 days in order to show that these Catholic movies are worth making. And if you like Maximilian Kolbe, the Catholic Church got a million more of those saints. I mean, we don't have our Josephine Bakita movie yet. I mean, there's a lot of drama in these Catholic saints. So let's get out and see Triumph of the Heart. But I'll talk a little bit more about distribution, how you distribute a movie like this, and more about the wonderful, magnificent. I don't even have the words to describe the greatness of the Saint Maximilian Kolbe on his feast day here. We'll talk more about him with Anthony D'Ambrosio right after this.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
He was a Jesuit, a cardinal, and a doctor of the church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Robert Bellarmine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, including helping to draft two important catechisms that defended church teachings during the Protestant Revolt. Pope Clement VIII named Bellarmine a cardinal because, as the Pope put it, Bellarmine had not his equal for learning.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Anthony D'Ambrosio is our guest. He's made a beautiful film called Triumph of the Heart about if you want to understand the 20th century, understand Maximilian Kolbe. There you go. I've got it right there for you. Anthony was telling us, Kolbe ended up in the darkest places of the 20th century, and somehow he was the light of Christ shining in those places. So tell us a little bit, because tomorrow is the Feast of the Assumption of Mary, about his relationship with the Blessed Virgin Mary.
I think, yeah, so there can be so much said, and it would take much longer than 10 minutes to elucidate it. He's one of the greatest theologians of Marian theology, to be honest. And there's so much in there that I could get into. But for perhaps the more poetic direction to go, St. Maximilian Kolbe was raised in Poland, and the Queen of Poland is Mary, but particularly the image of Our Lady of Częstochowa. And in the film that we depict Mary as Our Lady of Częstochowa, and it's a sort of shocking image to kind of the American sentiment, because this is not the Holy Card Mary that we're used to. Anybody who has been to Poland and had the honor of getting to see this icon, it's a very spooky image, to be honest, because Our Lady is scarred, and it is dark, kind of full of smoke, and her skin is almost like black. You can barely see her. And I think a part of this is that she went through the all of these conquerings and wars with the Polish people. It's one of the oldest icons that we have. And her image as Our Lady of Częstochowa is an image of a scarred kind of a scarred woman who bears the scars of her children. And so Kolbe would have prayed in front of this icon at least once a year, maybe many times a year. And he had a devotion to Our Lady that was this incredibly tender sense of Our Lady being with us in our suffering. And I think that a big part of the through line of Kolbe's life is his amazing ability to be somebody who suffered and to be one of the most prolific people in the world, particularly because of the comfort that he derived from his closeness to Our Lady. And I think his closeness came as this sense of Our Lady being able to bear everything that the world had to throw at her, and to be next to him in the midst of that. And so I would say that Kolbe's personal love and his tenderness was just deeply shaped by that. And it was a big part of his courage.
Again, the name of the movie is Triumph of the Heart. I want to keep saying it so that when you see it, you'll go to it on September 12th and 13th. Support Catholic filmmakers. You know, Catholic filmmakers are in a certain sense alternative media, and the alternative media folks, when they get a movie from the Marxists, go out and support their Marxist films, and the revolutionaries go out there. We need Catholics to go out and support alternate Catholic media, and then it won't. Then in time, it won't be alternate media. In time, it will be what everybody is seeing, because people will begin to understand. I think, Anthony, people want beautiful art. They don't want just junk. People want to see beautiful works of art.
Right. I think that the desire for beauty is actually one of the deepest, most pined after desires that we have right now in our world, the desire for hope. what the world is sort of presenting through its media is a very permissive world because it's a hopeless world. There's no point to anything. So live your life however you want and be as comfortable as you can. And frankly, I think all of us just instinctively know that that's not enough. Whenever we hit suffering, we're going to need something deeper, something grittier, something more real to hold on to, something transcendent. And I think that it's our job as the church to sort of extend beyond ourselves the stories of our heroes so that we can present that hope to the world. The most beautiful stories are the stories of our saints. I think, hands down, that is just the truth. But we've done a very bad job at telling them for a lot of different reasons. And one of the reasons is because the ecosystem that we have to sort of lean on with the creation of these stories is so small. There's not a lot of funding. There's not a lot of support. There's not a lot of there's not a Catholic distribution company that's doing lots of big movies, right? And in order for us to sort of turn that flywheel, I think that we have to change our sort of our attitudes about how we participate in Catholic media. Yes, a lot of things have been made that are cheesy, and we don't want to waste our time, and perhaps we want to gag sometimes when we see stuff that's made. I don't think people will feel that way about our movie because I think it's such a sea change and very different than other things that have been made. But that said, I think regardless, when something like this is made and actually gets to the point where it's getting a theatrical distribution, the entire movie ecosystem only looks at 2 days to determine whether or not a movie gets distributed and whether more movies like that get distributed afterwards or invested in or made. And so we have to show up ready to watch the movie, even if we don't know if it's going to be good, even if we haven't heard from everyone who has already gone and seen it. We have to be sort of willing to be the first ones to go and see it to sort of support it. And so that's kind of the call that I'm making right now. If you want to see things that are different, that are made, that are good, that are not just cheesy, go out and support this movie when it comes out, and you'll be a part of helping to sort of say collectively, Hollywood, we want to see more of this type of thing made.
Anthony D'Ambrosio is the writer and director of Triumph of the Heart. All right, so look, let's say I live here in Southern California. I'm all in. I want to go to the theater and see Triumph of Heart. How do I do that? How do I find it? What do I do?
Well, there's two things that you can do. The first thing is, if you have means, doing a theater buyout is absolutely huge and crucial for us, because each one of these theaters that gets bought out becomes a beachhead for us for distributing the movie in that theater for the rest of the theatrical release. You get to sort of make sure that it comes to your city if you do that. The second thing is, people are able to, through this site that we've made, triumphoftheheart.com, you can go there and find us, they're able to sort of raise their hands and say, I would like to volunteer to host a screening in a theater in my area. They put on a little bit of money, get a few tickets, but they're going to get a page that allows them to sort of collect other people in their group to all put together in their parish or men's group or school or homeschool group, whatever, to say, together, we're going to raise the money that we need to do a screening in our city. Right now, if people are doing that, they will be able to sort of be a part of that movement of drawing the movie to their city and making sure there's a stake in the ground, a flag in the ground planted to get that there and for us to be able to release the movie in those theaters. Of course, you can also just wait until September 12th, but there's no telling exactly which theaters the movie will end up getting into if people do not do these buyouts. So that's how we sort of force the hand of the system.
So triumphoftheheart.com is where you go to find out about that?
Triumphoftheheart.com. You'll be able to find more information there about how to do all of these sorts of things, yeah.
And have you got trailers out? Can people, I want to see the trailer of this. Can they go to YouTube and watch a trailer of Triumph of the Heart?
Yeah, you can just search triumphoftheheart.com and search Triumph of the Heart and you'll start finding all of our stuff. It's been out for a while now, so at this point you'll be able to find it anywhere.
So is this a career for you now? You're going to make more movies?
God willing, if everybody shows up on September 12th, then we'll be able to do many more.
Do you like my Josephine Bikita idea? Have I piqued your interest? Yeah.
My interest is piqued for sure.
Talk about a great movie. That would be one that you want to see. Triumph of the Heart. If you want to find out more about it, go to triumphoftheheart.com. It's the brand new movie coming out about St. Maximilian Kolbe. And You know, some people are put off by the word saint. They think that they're cardboard cutout people. An absolutely fascinating person. You will not find a more fascinating person than Maximilian Kolbe. So do go see it, Triumph of the Heart. Anthony D'Ambrosio, you're my favorite D'Ambrosio now. Tell your dad that.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, God bless you. I all the success in the world to you. God bless you for making this beautiful movie and for sharing it with all of us. Don't forget, September 12th and 13th, go see it. St. Maximilian Kolbe, pray for us. And also don't forget tomorrow, a big feast day, the feast of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. We'll have new programming for you. But, you know, if you can, make it to Mass. We'll see you tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.